This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, My Journey to the Light on Route 752. And the author is Marguerite Bellanger. And Marguerite joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Marguerite.
Hello, Steve.
Great to have you with us. Let me read just a few words about your book that you've written. You said this: at 42 years old, I awoke a secret that... Is that right? I awoke a secret? At 42 years old, I awoke a secret that happened to me at the age of 7. That secret hurt me because I lived with sadness all my life and could not understand where it came from. I then developed a weight problem. When I realized that I was raped at 7 years old, I could not understand why those boys did this to me. So that haunted you for a lot of years, didn't it?
A lot of years until I was 42, I didn't even know why I was so sad. This is when I realized that I have a weight problem and then I had to do something with it. And but first, I want to share why I decided to write this book, if it's okay.
Please.
I wrote this book because I knew that when I figure out everything about this story, I want to write something that matters. I just didn't want to write. I love to write. I get up in the morning and I write my thought of the night, and I can write all the time. This is something that I love to do, and I knew that one day I'm going to write a book. But what the subject's going to be all about, I don't know. And then when I did that healing, the healing of that pain that would follow me for all those years and I didn't have any idea where it come from, I thought I'm not the only one in the world that suffer like this. And for me, it developed in a weight problem. For other people, it's depression. And other people, they might drink, and other people, they might kill themselves. But for me, I knew that I'm not the only one that's suffering. So that's the reason why I choose to write this book. And yes, at the age of 7, I realized that I was raped by little boys, and my dad saved my life. So I really dedicate this book to my dad. After being my... We had 9 children when this happened, and I was the 3rd one in the family. And like you can see, I have 7 children. My mom has 7 children after me. So my dad rocked me for about 3 months, so the healing will take place in my body, because the doctor say to my dad, oh, she's just a nervous kid. She doesn't want to go to school because something must have happened to school, but I don't see it be a big problem. Just keep her home until she's ready to go. And every time my dad bring me to school, I was screaming. I didn't want to go to school. But after the healing took place, I went to school, and I forgot about all the rest. I forgot about the people that were there. We moved about 6 months after to another school, and I never remember those guys. I didn't know they exist until I went to a rebirthing class. Because I have this weight problem, my sister told me to go to with her, and maybe I will find out why my weight play yo-yo all the time on me. So this is where I figured this out. And my dad said to me, wow, like if we knew. And it was a good thing they didn't know, because my dad would go and kill all the parents.
Sure.
You know,
right.
So I was, in a way, it was a blessing. And I have to look for blessing in my life, because I did have lots of blessing. Even if my, like I was saying in the book, this sadness took over my blessing. And it's because I let it go so far because I didn't understand. And when the mind doesn't understand, it seems like we feel we don't have any power. We cannot do anything because we feel stuck. And I felt stuck. And after I realized that when I turned 42, I felt very stuck. And I have people telling me, come on, forgive them, you know, and go with your life. But it's not that easy.
So help us understand now, all those years you were sad, but somehow your mind just blacked out the whole experience and you couldn't figure out why. I mean, you couldn't remember the experience. Well, that's what you're saying?
The doctor I was working with at that time that did the rebirthing, he told me that, you know what, your subconscious needs to hide this from you so you will survive.
Hmm.
The pain was too... Like, for me to be 3 months at home without wanting to go into school, the pain was inside my body. It was not just in my mind. It was inside my body. And for me to survive, this doctor explained to me that was the reason why I block everything. And there's a lot of people that block stories like that.
Especially when these type of traumatic experiences, like a rape, some sexual abuse at a very young age, that just gets blocked, and then it really drastically, negatively affects the person for years and years and years, and they don't understand why.
They don't understand why they hate men. They don't understand why they hate men. And it can be a woman, and it can be a man, the one that whoever got that abuse. And yes, this is very, 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 very sad, and that's why I wrote this book. Because I believe that we can do something about it when we take responsibility for it. So I was lucky enough in all those years to have good friends. I took a course, a self-development course, and I figured by studying it, I realized why my subconsciousness didn't want to give me what I was looking for because I was not ready for it. And when I was ready for it, well, there it was.
And how old were you when you finally realized what happened when it came back to your memory? How old were you again?
I was 42.
42.
And I went through the whole, by doing this kind of it's called rebirthing. I don't know if you heard about rebirthing. It's like breathing exercise. And I remember the whole thing. I remember the face of each boy. I remember their names, and it was amazing. It was amazing. I can smell it. I can, you know. Mm. And I couldn't lie. I couldn't lie because it was too. Like it was just like I was experiencing it
all over. Just going through it all over again.
Yeah, but for me, it was like the first time.
35 years later. My goodness. So that just proves how traumatic these kinds of experiences are when, you know, boys and girls are so young and these awful things happen.
Yeah, but imagine too, like for me, I thought I was the only victim there. Like for between 42 and 59, I thought, why they did that to me? I'm the only victim there, but I wasn't. I wasn't. All those boys were playing a game. They want to scare me, maybe because the teacher keep me too often after school. I don't know, but they want to scare me. And maybe they just start playing with me, and then it went to one thing to the other thing until they did it. But I felt like at that time when I realized all of that, I said, oh, my God, they were all victim with me.
Right.
They all were victims with me, and I forgot it, but they live 52 years with this.
Right.
Can you imagine live your life with this thought in your mind? I did that to this person.
Yeah, you raped somebody, and nobody ever knew about it, but you know. You carry that with you.
That's
right. That guilt. They have that guilt, just like you had the guilt of being the victim or the being raped, but they're still a victim because they did it.
They did it. So that's why the book was so important for me to forgive them and to know that I know that they were a victim too. And maybe I will never meet those people again, but maybe the book, if it needs to fall in their hands, it will. And then they might feel that life is good.
Mm-hmm.
That life loves them as much as I know now that life loves me. But to go through that, I have to take responsibility for my life. I have to say, okay, that's enough. What's wrong? Why do I do that? Why do I hurt myself so much with want to revenge? Because in a way, you don't really know it, but you want to revenge. And you revenge on yourself because you're the only one that can hurt when you start thinking about it.
Right,
so
revenge,
Or you're eating, or you know, because you don't take responsibility. You don't understand it. And this is when I start to do spirituality that I start to understand what's going on. I start to understand karma. And my God, that was an open eye because I heard about karma, but because we are Catholic, we don't go there. It's not something you need to teach. And but when I read karma I studied karma and I read the part that you don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. And in our church, we teach the opposite: don't do to others what you want others to do. To do to you, and it has like a mean when you do to others, you look at it as more as a positive way. I'm going to give, so I will receive. But when I wrote it that way in the book, you don't do to people because in karma is what you give, you receive, and it can be as negative as and positive.
Right.
So the way I learned it learned it all my life. I see it more positively. I see it more, you give love, you will receive love. You give help to someone, you will receive help from someone.
You forgive,
they forgive you.
Mm-hmm.
So I see it more as a positive thing, but when I study karma, I realize, oh my God. If somebody did that to me whenever I was 7 years old, I didn't do nothing wrong yet. So I must have did something wrong somewhere else in other life, and the life wants to rebalance itself. But until you understand that, you feel stuck. You resist it. You resist life. And life is appearing to you like she wants something from you. Like, I always feel that if I do this, life won't give me what I want. But if I do that, life won't give me what I want. And I'm going to give you an example with my weight. If I eat what I love, my weight go up. If I don't eat what I love, my weight go down. So one way or the other, I'm losing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm losing weight, or I'm losing what I like. So one way or the other, I'm losing something, and both things I want. I want to be really healthy and happy and slim, and at the same time, I want to eat what I want. So you see, and for me, life was like this with me. My whole life was like this. It seemed like if I want something, like when I got married, I want this guy, but then I realized I'm not happy with him. So it's like life is giving it to me, but then it took it away from me because it's not what I want. So it's, you know, the balance was not there. I didn't have any balance. But when I start seeing life as a friend and forgive myself and forgive other people and before you do the forgiving, you have to take responsibility. You have to know what responsibility is all about. And that's another thing that I didn't want to look at because when I was 7 years old, my mother already has 9 children. So I was the third one, so I had to hold the baby. I have to change the diapers. I have to give a bottle. I have to do the dishes. So responsibility came over me. It was not something that I want. It was something that was given to me. And the same thing when I got married. My husband wants to farm, and we bought lots of animals, but he didn't have time. He was working 7 days a week. So who was having the kids and the farm and the animal was me. So it was, again, I felt like life was giving me responsibility that I didn't want. So why should I take responsibility for my life? I didn't understand why people were telling me all the course I took, all the books I read, take responsibility for your life.
Right.
I didn't want to. Responsibility was part of my life.
So this light, this journey to the light, going from 7 when this awful thing happened, and then at 52 you started to understand.
Yeah, well, I was really 59, like 52 years later.
Oh, 52 years later. Okay, now I get it.
52 years later. It took me all that time
right.
to take responsibility, to see the light, that when you take responsibility, choice are clear. But you have to take the responsibility inside yourself.
Right.
Like ask yourself the question. It's all in there. It's all inside us, but we don't see it because we don't want to take that responsibility. We are scared. We don't know what we are scared about.
Well, you have taken the responsibility, Marguerite. We're just about out of time, and I want to make sure you are able to tell everyone where to get your book. Your title is My Journey to the Light on Route 752.
And in French, c'est Le Voyage vers la Lumière sur ma route 752. And you can have both language. And the reason why I wrote it both is because my children are married to English people. But after I wrote the book, I knew this book should go in school for study. And high school, college, university. And at the same time, help those kids that they go through abuse like this and they don't know what to do. So that's another reason why I wrote the book. So you can get the book on, if you go on my page on Facebook, you will see that we have Balboa Press, Barnes & Noble, and Amazon right now are selling it. And if you go search on Google online with my name and my title, you can, it's selling in many countries right now. They accept it in many countries, so I'm very, very excited about it.
Well, congratulations, Marguerite.
Before we go, can I say something else?
Real quick,
sure. I
want
to say thank you to Balboa and everybody that worked with me over there. They're so nice. And a special thank you to Jocelyne Desautels. She's the woman that, if this book is really appearing in front of you, she's the one that helped me do the book, and she was the one that translated the book for me, and she always received me with this big smile because she's excited about that book too. So I want to say thank you to her.
Well, thank you for being with us on Indie Book Publishing, Marguerite.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
Listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on TogiNet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on TogiNet.com. Mark Lipinski is coming to TogiNet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live two-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on TogiNet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Victory Rests with the Lord, God in the Vietnam War. And the author is Colonel James Schmidt, U.S. Army retired. And we welcome Colonel Schmidt to Indie Book Publishing, and this interview is brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Colonel.
Hello. How you doing, Steve?
Well, great to have you with us. And this is a whole different take on Vietnam. You don't hear this. You don't usually hear war and God mentioned in the same sentence. But that's where you put him. That's what you believe. You say this book explains why and how the most powerful military in the world was defeated by North Vietnam. And you also say that the Vietnam War, that you make this strong case that the war was winnable if God would have provided our leaders the wisdom and creativity to employ the correct tactics, because you had a very successful infantry company because you did include God, didn't you?
That's absolutely correct.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, Colonel, and how you reached this point in your life where you've written this book.
Okay. Well, I had two tours in Vietnam, one as an infantry platoon leader and the second as a company commander. And after Vietnam, I spent my career in the Special Forces Green Berets and put over 26 years in, primarily in operations, planning, strategy, and so forth for the military. And the reason I decided to write the book, it definitely was not motivated by someone wanting to become an author, but rather it's something I believe that God wanted me to do. By the grace of God, I commanded what many consider the most successful infantry company in the Vietnam War. Over 6 months that I commanded the company, we eliminated approximately 60 enemy soldiers without losing any of our own men, a success achieved, as far as I know, by no other infantry company in the Vietnam War. Therefore, I initially was encouraged to write a book on counterinsurgency and jungle warfare. However, after giving it some thought, I realized that technology and weapons change over time, and so consequently, so do tactics. Therefore, other than for military history purposes, I felt the book on the specific tactic I used in Vietnam would not be as important to a reader as knowing how to acquire the wisdom to use the correct tactics, regardless of the war one was fighting in. So I knew the Bible says it is God who provides man wisdom, and it is my experience that this is a truism, and there is no better time for a person to have wisdom and creativity than in war. So therefore, rather than only describing tactics that were effective and not effective, it was better to write a book that focused on the importance of first seeking God's purpose and asking God to provide the wisdom to achieve it, and to acknowledge that victory in war is in God's hands. And having led men into battle numerous times throughout my career, I can attest to the validity of Proverbs 21:31, which states, "The horse is made ready for the day of battle, but victory rests with the Lord." In other words, no matter how strong and well-trained one's military is, God is in control over who wins or loses. In fact, understanding the meaning of this proverb is the reason I titled my book, Victory Rests with the Lord, God in Vietnam.
Now, in your book, you talk about the need to provide your men the purpose of their mission. Why is this important?
Well, in leadership, one is required really to be an effective leader to provide purpose, motivation, and direction. And but if the purpose is provided, you probably don't need to motivate your troops all that much. The purpose is a good purpose. The men will tend to be more willing to support that mission. And I believe our purpose in Vietnam was an honorable one. It was to defend the South Vietnamese from the aggression of the North, to implement communism and deny them the freedom to learn about Jesus Christ. So once I relayed that information, I think, to my men, they had a purpose and no longer were just in Vietnam just to, mark time or just to survive. They actually had a purpose and a reason for fighting, and an honorable one.
And probably, and I don't know, maybe you, of course, you knew your men real well. Not all of them may have believed in Jesus Christ or were, of a faith-based kind of a person. And yet that just kind of describing that purpose kind of sets a higher standard of why they're there.
Yes, I think it's my belief is that a leader not only has to be competent, but they must be respected by the men they lead. And I think my experience is that if the men know your values and what motivates you and that you love and care for them, they're more responsive to what you require them to do.
Secretary of Defense during the Vietnam War, Robert McNamara, he wrote a book, In Retrospect, The Tragedy and Lessons of Vietnam. He takes a whole different approach than you do. What is the difference in the way he said it was unwinnable?
Well, McNamara never actually spent a day in the jungles. So he never really realized what the difficulties that were being gone through by the infantry guy on the ground. We adopted tactics and operations that played right into the enemy's strong positions, and therefore lost more men than necessary. We could have accomplished the same mission by other tactics, and those are described in the book. But primarily lifting a platoon or a company or a battalion of infantry into the middle of the jungle where the enemy has the advantage is not a good strategy to start with. All you are doing is bringing in targets for the enemy to shoot at and kill, which was what affected America's resolve more than anything else, and that was U.S. casualties. So we were playing right into the enemy's hands, and the Americans lost their resolve before we were able to establish a final victory. But in fact, I think we had established a victory after the Paris Peace Accord. However, because the Americans had already lost their resolve, we were unwilling to enforce the treaty agreement. And that was the real tragedy, I think, of the Vietnam War.
Well, I've never been in war. I've been in the military. I've I have a sense, obviously, because of the training, but when you're in combat, a lot of things do change in the way you feel about yourself, you feel about your, I'm certainly your fellow soldier beside you, and also they always say, you know, what do they say about being in the foxhole? That's where people learn to, that's where they cry out to God.
Well, that's true. I mean, it's you're dealing with life and death situations on a daily basis. And, you know, what people don't realize, when we send men to war, we not only ask them to risk their own lives, but we ask them to kill other human beings. And this is an important thing I think I instilled in my men, is that we had to kill the enemy to defend the innocent. That was our duty, to defend the innocent. However, we shouldn't kill out of hatred or revenge. And I think some units tended to think that was the way to motivate their troops. And I don't think hate and revenge have any place in combat. In fact, I think it interferes with level-headed thinking. And I think it also affects the troops when they return home. I think there's a vast difference of a soldier returning home that realizes he had to kill the enemy out of the duty to defend the innocent, and those that ended up killing the enemy out of hatred and revenge. They've got to live with that throughout their life, and there's no reason for that.
And one of your strong messages, you say, no matter how strong a nation's military is, it is God who decides who wins or loses. That's the bottom line, isn't it? That's the absolute bottom line.
Yes, that's the bottom line. And I tell in the book why I believe, you know, the question is asked, well, why did God allow America to lose a war-fighting communist that is an atheist ideology? And just like God did with the Israelites many times, he disciplined them by allowing evil nations to defeat them, to bring them back to him. And I think that may have been what happened in the early 60s. This is when the nation started drifting downhill. And instead of returning to God, I'm afraid we continued down the slippery slope. But I believe that was one of the reasons God denied our leaders the wisdom to use the right strategy and tactics. With the right tactics, we definitely could have won that war. And but God had other plans.
Now, in your book, you've even included, it sounds like, which it's not a religious book, but it's a military experiences book, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it, but you included a chapter on military strategy and doctrine. Why did you do that?
Well, it helps the reader to understand a little bit of how ineffective our senior leaders' tactics were, and one would have to question, these are smart men. How could they make such a terrible tactical mistakes as they did? And one can only say, you know, God must have denied them the wisdom to use the right tactics, because all doctrine would have had them using better tactics as well.
And you say that there are ways, in fact, you point out, I guess, some of the ways that, besides the things that we've talked about, some of the tactics that we could have used to win the war.
Yes. So many books are written that criticize, or, you know, like McNamara saying that the war was unwinnable. Well, he was the German, or the Department of Defense, what else is he going to say, you know, that he didn't know the proper tactics? Many of them criticize what was wrong with the war, but very few actually come up with solutions that could have made a difference, and I tried to do that.
So what is the most important lesson, after all is said, what is the most important lesson from the Vietnam War?
Okay, I think it's that our nation, we as a nation, need to acknowledge God over overriding power and our dependence on Him, and return to Him, and return to the Holy Bible as our moral compass, and I think we will receive blessings from the Lord if we do that.
And as you look at America today, we certainly are struggling, aren't we, with that kind of behavior and thinking and attitude.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, since all things are under God's control, He has the power to, in peacetime as well as in war, to make us successful, and I mean successful in God's sight. And I try to explain that also in my book. There is a difference between success in God's eyes and success in the world's eyes. There are two different things. And success in God's eyes will provide true joy and contentment and peace, whereas success in the world's eyes definitely misses that.
Colonel James Schmidt, U.S. Army retired. We've been listening to this great colonel talk about his book, Victory Rests with the Lord, God in the Vietnam War. Colonel, tell us how to get your book.
Well, I think probably the quickest way is to just go on Amazon and put the title in, or put just Colonel Schmidt, and it'll pop it up.
Well, thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Westbow Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Hummingbirds, Pennies, and Hope. And the author is Jeannie Lemon Skinner, and Jeannie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Jeannie.
Hello.
Well, it's nice to have you with us, and this is going to be a very different way to talk about angels. I think many believe in angels. There may be some unbelievers. You may have some critics. I'm sure you meet them from time to time, but I think we all believe in angels. At least we want to believe.
I think so. I think most people do, and
right.
Most people believe in God.
Right. So this book is about receiving signs from angels and deceased loved ones. The characters are fictitious, but the stories are all true, and it's a novel. It's not a how-to book.
Correct. Right.
So, but the reader can learn how to communicate with his or her angels while enjoying a great story. So, tell us a little bit about yourself, Jeannie, and how this all came about.
Well, I'm a Protestant, and growing up, I had a lot of friends who were Catholic, and they all had angels. And I can remember asking my mother about angels, and she told me that they only belong to Catholics, which I couldn't understand, but that's what she said. And I said, okay. So it was not part of my upbringing. You know, it wasn't. It seemed to truly belong to the Catholics. Well, I was going through a bad period in my life, and I was praying. I've always believed in the power of prayer, and I was praying, and I needed something. And I went to the library, because I'm a reader, and I found Doreen Virtue's book called Divine Guidance. Took it home, read it, and like a whole new world opened up to me. And I started doing some of the things that she said in her book, and I actually went to her workshop, and I learned about communicating with angels. So that was my beginning of getting acquainted with angels, but more importantly, all the things that they did in my life that I'm such a firm believer. And you access them through prayer. The neat thing, I think, is that you can get to know them, and for me, they leave me signs, and pennies is, of course, in the title, hummingbirds, and those are because those have appeared to me in response to prayers or just reassurance. Many, many stories that, of course, I couldn't include in my book have happened, and I just delight in people telling me their signs. Some say, oh, it's for me, it's hearing a song. Or it's, I've prayed about such and such, and then I will see, and then they will tell me what they'll see. So everybody is unique in what they receive, but I just know for sure that if you pray and ask, you'll get a sign, and then you know that how much you're loved and you're not alone.
Tell us about Anna.
Well, Anna, again, I'm a teacher, and so Anna is... and the other characters are all kind of based on little bits and pieces of students. But Anna, part of her is me, you know, growing up in a Christian church-going household. And I kind of think that there's a belief that New Age doesn't belong to these church-going people. And that is Anna. And I think that was me for a long time. People thought, really, you're into angels and this kind of stuff and you go to church? And the answer is yes. So that's Anna. And Anna decides, like most teenagers, I'm going to take the easy way out and I'm going to research something I know that's easy to find. And she goes to the library, sees some things about angels. Oh, yeah, my grandma has books on that. I'll research it. So as she, you know, goes into it, like a lot of us who do research, you learn a whole lot more than you expected. And for her, she learns a lot about her family. And, of course, it doesn't go smoothly. As she gets into it, she faces criticism.
So we have Anna, who really is just trying to write this paper, a research paper, and of course, most of them are boring, she thinks, and here she gets into a whole
new... they are.
Yeah, a whole new world, like you talked about, for yourself, kind of opens up.
Yeah.
And what does she discover? She discovers something from her grandmother.
Well, she learns that her mother and grandmother had both gone to a workshop, and which is based on me of going to a workshop, and my daughter went with me. So that kind of transcends to me. And then her grandmother passes away, which is also very common for my students. They're at the age where their grandparents are starting to pass, and that's so painful. So the reader can relate to that. But the neat thing is her grandmother does come back and gives her signs that she's around, which, again, I've experienced with my mother who passed, of her giving me signs. So that's kind of reassuring, I think. And then she discovers her grandmother's journals, and she learns there through the journals about angels. She learns, she finds her grandmother had angel cards where she could pray and ask a question and actually get an answer. So she learns a whole lot from her grandmother and her mother, because then she starts talking to her mother about these things. So hopefully it's also a subtle message to teenagers that maybe you could actually learn from the other generations just by asking them questions and talking to them.
Well, like we said, she certainly helps others around her to learn new things, but at the same time, there's some big critics. In fact, one of them is her dad.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And that would be, I think, fairly typical of being criticized by particularly your father. Now, her parents are divorced, and she does live with her mother, and then for, a while her grandmother lived with them. But her father has remarried, and there's the stepmother element in there. And her father is just, has no desire in her to explore the issue of angels at all. To him, it's nonsense. He doesn't want her to be criticized. And in part, I'm sure his ego is involved. Like, the word's out that my daughter's into angels, and, that's kind of freaky or new age-ish. And, he would not approve of that. But he loves his daughter. And so they do resolve the issue, but the criticism is real, and the criticism from her best friend is very real, which, again, teenagers relate to that. You feel differently about something. You're considered odd or unique.
And the school newspaper, the editor, when the word gets out, it's not... She turned into kind of a freak, right? They label her as a freak.
Right, and it just happens to coincide with the school and many schools. I also have been drama director at my school, and for about 11 years I was drama director. And most schools still do the Crucible, which, of course, is about the Salem witch trials. So it just happens to coincide with the theater program doing that. And then Anna, they give oral reports, which of course most students do at some point in their life. And the editor of the school paper hears her report on angels. And she, just can't buy any of it. And she writes an editorial criticizing her and comparing her to a witch. So it's, the timing was not really good for poor little Anna, and also who was sitting in her class.
So Anna's really facing a lot of pressure.
She does. She faces lots of pressure from her friends. But then she also develops a following, and she's not sure how to handle it, because Anna is just a pretty typical girl. She's not... she's well-liked, but she's not well-known in the school until this occurs. And then everybody seems to know her, and that makes her feel very uncomfortable to be also not only criticized, but also adored. You know, she really, this isn't her. I don't think she wants either. She just wants to be her and left alone. So it's very hard to handle this notoriety. That's really a struggle for her, either whether it's positive or negative. She just wants to be, you know, go back to the way it used to be. She was happy that way. But, you know, life doesn't handle it, you know, doesn't allow us to handle things that easily. You know, it's filled with these challenges and these decisions. So I think it's pretty realistic.
Is this book for people of all faiths?
Oh, definitely. It's the main character, of course, is a Christian, but the God and angels are for all faiths, and that's one of the things I like best about it. You know, I teach, and in my classroom, I have many different faiths. I have Muslim students. I've had Jewish students. I've had Buddhists. I've had Christians. I've had atheists. I've had them all, and I think, you know what? Angels is the common denominator. It just pulls you all together. You can sit there of four different faiths, and all of them can say, I believe in God, and I believe in angels. And it doesn't matter their religion or how they practice it. That's a common factor, which I just celebrate that. But I think, yes, you know, because, again, it is one God.
So God helps us understand he's there through these angel messengers?
I think so. I think so.
So our prayers are answered often through angels?
Well, God's the one you're praying to. God's the one who hears, and angels are the messengers to reassure you that, yeah, you're not alone. You're not alone. And you know, when my mother was passing, I had bus duty. I was at school. I knew I needed to get to the hospital. I had to go to bus duty, which I wasn't pleased about, but I had to do my duty. I left. I closed my classroom door, did my 15 minutes of bus duty. When I came back, waiting outside my door was a penny. And I will always remember that. That was such a gift to me that there was a penny waiting. Everybody had gone. You know, kids had gone. Most of the teachers had gone, except for those of us with duty. So nobody, you know, where did it come from? And, you know, stories like that have happened so often to me, but that one was so special. You know, I just knew I was being watched over and loved, and I would get through this time, and there was that penny. It was just a wonderful, wonderful, comforting thing to have.
We've been listening to Jeannie Lemon Skinner. She's the author of her book, Hummingbirds, Pennies, and Hope. Jeannie, tell us how to get your book.
Well, you can get it at Balboa Press, of course. You can get it at Amazon.com. You can get it at Barnes & Noble, any of those places. You can get it. You can also go to my website, and you can order it there. I do have a website where people add their stories to my stories, which I love. And that's JeannieLemonSkinner.com. Real easy to find.
Very good. Jeannie spelled J-E-A-N-N-E. Jeannie Lemon Skinner.
Uh-huh. With two M's.
Thank you so much, Jeannie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you. It was been my pleasure.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.